So yeah, man, we got Dennis Kim on the line. So I guess that makes sense, right? On the line.
Yeah, kind of basically on the line. How's it going, man?
Yeah. I guess introduce yourself, who you are.
Sure, yeah.
And I guess we'll start from there. I mean, yeah. And then I guess kind of how we met, how I know you. I mean, I didn't just randomly just find you.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, thanks for having me on, Rich. My name's Dennis. I am a Korean-American based in New York, born and raised here. And I'm a professional magician. I've been doing magic ever since I was a kid, but I've been doing it professionally for a few years now. And it's funny, I met you through Benjamin, actually. I think it was through Instagram. I knew of you on Instagram. And then I did like a meetup with Benjamin, who is also like a magician on Instagram, for those of you that don't know. And so I met him at, is it Hudson Yards, I think? And then you tagged along and I was like, I know you. And then we just jammed out and it was pretty dope. We filmed the videos.
So yeah. You said you knew me through Instagram. And now for some of the people who don't know me as much, I used to post a lot. I'm kind of still trying to get back into it again. But is that how you knew me? Because you saw my posts on there?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Just through like hashtags and stuff. You know, you're also a magician in New York. So
yeah.
It kind of ends up that way.
I didn't think. I thought that was just you meeting me for the first time. And then, you know, Benjamin hit you up. Because, you know, Benjamin's funny. He just hits up random people on you.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I mean, I totally
want to be friends. Wait, is that what he did? He's like, hey, Dennis, I'm a magician. Want to be friends?
Pretty much. And then I didn't I kind of didn't follow up with him for like 7-8 months.
Okay.
But I was also I was also in a different job. I was in insurance for, you know, the better part of the year. So magic wasn't really on my mind. So Instagram was sort of like a thing on the back burner for me. So.
You were, if I remember correctly, you were a teacher, magic teacher, something like that?
Yeah, yeah. So I graduated college back in 2017. And the summer following that, I somehow stumbled upon a job. It was a part-time job to teach kids magic. So about like 25 hours out of the week, you know, 5 hours a day. It's like a summer program for kids, you know, kindergarten through sixth grade. And that kind of planted the seed in my mind, like, oh my God, I could actually maybe do magic for a living. I'm making money doing it right now and it's making me happy. It's fun and it's sparking creativity in others. So
we have just met around that same time, right? And then we just started talking more on Instagram, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit after that. Yeah, that's when I was starting to connect on Instagram and kind of get more invested in connecting with others on that space.
Got it. Okay. And then you went from there. What made you go from, hey, you know, just doing that to, I want to do magic only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of a long journey. I mean, it was like a finite amount of time that this summer program, it was like 6.5 weeks, right? And it was fun and all, but I realized, okay, I think I do need to get like you know, quote unquote, grown up job. I need to be an adult about this. You know, this, I can't just like pursue my dreams and it seems a little irresponsible. So I started to apply to jobs and I ended up doing like this accounts receivable kind of thing with an insurance company, basically a 9-to-6 desk job. And I really hated it since day one because it took out all the creativity from my mind. And I realized that I was not bringing to fruition the things that were coming to my mind because I'd be so caught up with the job that I have to do at this place. And so I was very conservative with my finances and I always wanted to do magic. And I knew that, you know, on my deathbed, I do not want to be asking, what if I pursued it? What would have happened? I didn't want those questions. So I took a risk and I quit the job. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go back to that summer program because they welcomed me back. And so for those 6.5 weeks that I'd be teaching kids magic part-time, I'd be having magic in my mind pretty much every day. And since it was just part-time, the rest of my time could be allocated towards starting to venture out into this full-time professional career.
What was your like steps? I guess for more for like for people who are like, because I know you you have a huge following on Instagram, right?
Kind of. Yeah.
For some people, yeah. But you know, mm-hmm. Basic. I mean, it's not like 50,000 or you know 50 million, but it's up there. It's more than 2000. Once you made that decision, how did you go upon like, okay, what do I have to do?
Totally. So if I remember correctly, around that period of time, I was pretty stressed because I don't want to fail in this pursuit to make this career happen, because I've always loved magic. I've always loved being a performer. So one of the things that were in my mind was social media. And social media is, you know, right now, even today, and, you know, more so than ever before, is where all the attention is. And I knew that, oh, it's not just fun and games with content. You can actually, you know, maybe get gigs. And, you know, it's essentially a portfolio. That's kind of how I looked at it, like a modern portfolio, where it's like, hey, if you don't know my work, just look at my Instagram, look at the videos that I do. This is kind of my creativity outlet. So you can see the kind of stuff that I do. And not only that, what I loved about it was the opportunity to meet other people and network. You know, you hear in like college, like, oh, you got to go to these network meetings and events. And then, you know, you shake hands with these people and this and that. And it's like, it's kind of meaningless to everyone, all these students, right? Very few of them take it seriously because there's just no value behind it. But to me, real networking is finding the people in my field, in that niche, and finding people that have more skin in the game. So actually, Rich, you're one of those people that I wanted to learn a lot from, because I know that you've been doing full-time magic for a number of years when I was just starting out, right? How long was it? Like 7, 8, 9?
I started making money with it a while ago, but it wasn't a lot. Yeah. I still had a day job. Like, right. It was just like I had maybe a gig a month or something like that, or sometimes no gigs.
Right.
And then I would have like a gig and like 6 months later, but it wasn't like there was, I was focused on it. I mean, but I wasn't.
Right.
I just didn't think it was possible because I didn't know anybody. It wasn't until like years later, I just hard knocks and stuff, learned everything on my own. Then by the time I met you was already when I was doing.
You're doing full time.
Yeah.
For like a number of years, right? It's been a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not like known like a lot of magicians are, but I'm what you call, you know, the workers, you know, like there's.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so I instantly recognized that. And I could just tell immediately when I met you, like you had a lot of experience in all this and you had a lot of advice to share and these like just tips and things that you just would learn only through experience and trial and error. And I figured, oh, this is a great person to kind of like learn from and kind of look at as a mentor to understand, because it's a very daunting endeavor to start. Like, hey, I just want to be a magician. It's kind of funny, right? Like you think of like Arrested Development, if you know that TV show, like Job, like a failed magician. Yeah. It's comedic, right? Yeah. It's just a funny thing. Like no one says it seriously.
I won't say the company name. I won't say the product. But I know you know what I'm talking about. There's a specific product out there that kind of shows you how to make money and a lot of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the trailer of that, it says, you know, like, you know, have you, you know, it's the dream. It's what everyone wants to do is make money, you know, doing magic tricks and stuff with cards.
Right.
And I remember, I forgot who it was that said that I showed the trailer to that and they're not a magician. They saw it and they were like, that's not my dream. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, well, you're right. Not everyone's dream. I remember you saying that it was also your concern at some point when you were asking me like how to go upon like getting a website and what to do and all that stuff. You were very scared of doing this, it working out, and then being scared of the excitement of being just learning, I guess, magic or just being a magician in general without, you know, more as a hobby than, I guess, as a career, so to speak. Because there's a difference between working something you really, really enjoy as a hobby and then all of a sudden making money from it. And then you realize, crap, there's a whole business side to it. And I don't like doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are so many, different aspects and components to a lot of different working parts. And so when I first started on this pursuit, you know, I was still also teaching kids magic in that summer program. And so I was kind of just scrambling. I was like, I got to just make business cards. I have to make a website. I know that these are the essentials, but that's all I knew, right? I'd be watching some lectures on, there's a certain magic website that, you know, that has these like video downloads of other professional magicians, and they give lectures, and some of them are tailored towards pursuing professional magic and how to get more gigs and things. So I've been trying to learn through those lectures and things, but I felt like something was missing, and I figured it's better to learn from someone that I would personally know, that I could actually have a conversation back and forth with and ask questions that are relevant to what I'm what my concerns are at that point. So one of the things from you was like website design and little tidbits on like how to negotiate rates and how to communicate with potential clientele to make sure I lock down the gig, and how to approach the gig once the date comes, you know, and the follow-ups and all those things that I would have never thought about unless I did a gig and then I missed out on all those things and realized, oh, I could have gotten a lot more mileage out of these opportunities.
Yeah.
You know? So. Yeah.
And that's something that honestly, I don't know where, I can't even think of where I've gotten those bits. I think it's just through life in general of.
Right.
Of
just experience.
I guess, yeah. And just other ventures I've done. Like I used to sell life insurance, and then, you know, I learned and I hate cold calling. And a lot of sometimes we did that, or I've had jobs where I was telemarketing. Mm-hmm. And you learn how to, they give you a script, and I hated scripts, but I understand why sometimes they work, because they're supposed to cover everything. But like you said, watching a lecture on where they teach you how to become a professional magician, it's not always helpful, because sometimes they'll give you the idea like, oh, you get a contract, get a website, but then there are situations that they're just not covering because there's just not enough time to cover those mm-hmm. situations. I've gone to the point sometimes where I've seen some of them. I have a question. I'm like, you know what? Let me contact that magician. Because, you know, in the magic world, it's pretty small. You get in contact with them. Right? Mm-hmm. So I found this website. I found his social media. Tried contacting him, and you can't.
Right.
It doesn't accept, I guess, random contacts from people. So there was no way for me to ask whatever question. I found him on Twitter. So I messaged him on Twitter. Right. Still haven't heard back. Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, you just learn from making mistakes. And that's where I've learned. And then just reading a ton of books and trying out the stuff in the books.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that just goes back to the importance of Instagram in my mind, where I was, you know, reaching out to people and they were responding back, you know. And perhaps there was some sort of a component of ethos, so to speak, with the kind of videos and content I was putting out. But I was just expanding my network, and I knew that I needed to surround myself with like-minded people and people that are in the field that I'm trying to pursue. You know that old saying, I'm paraphrasing, but like you're kind of like a collective of like the five closest people to you, yeah. That kind of thing. And five is an arbitrary number, of course. But the point is, like, you're kind of this conglomerate of the people that you kind of like make as your circle. And me coming from college, from an out-of-state place, like I went to UMass, and coming back home to New York, all my friends are in a different state. And none of those friends are going to help me with this pursuit. I'm pretty much alone. But this is what I wanted to do. So I knew that I needed to reinvent and rethink, you know, my social circle. To benefit me, not just, you know, socially, right, to have like new friends and, you know, post-college and coming back home, but also that are going to push me in my career and kind of get the ball rolling for me.
Yeah.
So Instagram has been a big component with that.
What made you want to choose Instagram over, say, Facebook or Twitter?
Right.
I used to hate, like, I don't hate Twitter. I like Twitter. I just don't know how to use Twitter. And I know a lot of people, and for me, I see Twitter as one of the social medias where if you do, where it's more like a community. It's like you could, people could start talking, right?
Right.
What made you choose like Instagram compared to anything else?
Yeah, Instagram, it was back in 2017, I created my account that was solely for magic. And I had been using Instagram just as like a personal account in college and things. And I knew that it was a way for me to just post videos that are just kind of short form. It's not like I'm going to have to edit this whole professionally edited grade, high grade kind of content, like YouTube longer format stuff. And I had tried YouTube a little bit here and there in college, and I kind of didn't want to pursue it. It was too much of a time commitment for me. And I knew I had like a lot of ideas, and I just wanted to put them out in different pieces of content. And Instagram, I started to realize that there's a whole magic community on there back in 2017 that I had no idea about. So I'm like, you know, let me kind of participate, so to speak, in this community and share my ideas. And I was, you know, I was pretty happy to find that people were liking my ideas. And I was posting like every day, like over those 2 summers that I was teaching kids. And I was up to like, you know, going up to like 750 followers. And I was like, oh, like, I can't believe these people are saying that they like my ideas. Maybe I could kind of run with that and continue making content, because I was very happy with it. Like, I'd be coming home from work. It'd be probably like 6:30 or so, you know, eat dinner. And then right after that, I was making videos. Like, that was the thing that I was looking forward to. That was my highlight of the evening, like Monday to Friday, and posting about it. And I kind of was learning the game of Instagram with the hashtags and engaging with others and reaching out to DMs and hashtag research and understanding the market that I'm tailoring to and all this kind of stuff. It's just like, it was uncharted territory to me at the time, but it was fascinating because I was like, never before in human history can you reach out to that many people around the world in different countries, different states, what have you, and have them see your ideas and the things that are, that you put into reality from your mind. So yeah, Instagram has been, it's been important, but, but it's been good too.
Long story, but no, it was great. It's, and there's some stuff in there that, and what about people who struggle? Do you feel it's important to focus on the numbers?
What do you mean by struggle?
Like, there are some people who just like, they want to, you know, they just want to post because they want to get the following.
Right.
They want people to follow them. But then, and then if they don't get the following, then they get upset.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough call, man. I mean, I have, I've had different reasons for pursuing Instagram. Initially, it was the initial excitement of, wow, people are following me because they like my ideas. And then somewhere in the middle there, I love the idea of people kind of like having this sort of weird like reverence for me for all the ideas I was sharing. And, you know, it's kind of human nature. You get a lot of attention from people that like your stuff. You're going to feel good about it. So as I'm like hitting like 2,000, 2,500 followers, it's like, yeah, like I'm the man. Like, look where I'm going with this, right? And that's just me being honest about it. But somewhere along those lines, the reason completely changed for me, because when I started hitting like 5,000, like 5,500, 6,000, I was like, ooh, like that, this is a lot of eyes on my content. And I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with that. I don't think this is what I want. I don't want to be this public figure on Instagram. You know, I'd be getting not only praise, but a lot of criticism that would also be a slight annoyance. And then I'd be finding that I'd be spending more and more and more time on Instagram, where it would end up being like a 7 to 8 hour thing every single day, just to get back to everybody on messages, on the comments, make sure I'm keeping up with the content, making sure that my content was getting better and better and higher quality. It just kind of evolved into like, it just became a different reason for me to use it. And it just went back to the idea of, okay, I think this is just necessary as a professional portfolio, because I was getting gigs through Instagram, and I still, that's still the main way that I get gigs and private events and stuff, well, all these inquiries.
But when it comes to gigs, are you getting, I mean, do you know how to set up, how to find out how people are finding you, like say through like analytics?
Right. The analytics don't really,
what I mean from your
tell
site,
me, like, mm-hmm.
Do you know how to set that up?
Yeah, I do see the analytics with
that'll track everything from like your entire brand, so to speak, all over the internet, and it'll tell you, you know, where, you know, people are finding you and everything.
Right. Yeah, I do have that set up. If I'm honest, I don't check that. And really, it's a whole thing of like knowing where things work for you. And Instagram has been keeping me busy enough with that like I have been like not curating my website enough, admittedly, but I don't get a lot of traffic towards my site, and most of them are not people that follow up with like inquiries and requests and stuff.
I feel like for what we do, our site is more like another portfolio.
Absolutely.
Compared to like Instagram, and the way I see Instagram too, and I've heard this many times from other people, that Instagram is a portfolio. Like, don't if someone says, if someone says, oh, you know, do you have, I mean, nowadays I have gotten a few of those sometimes where it was, hey, you know, do you have a website or Instagram just to see what you do? It is like a portfolio, but don't consider it your website.
Right.
Your website is more like bigger, like it's like your home base
where absolutely you
have everything in there.
You know, and right.
And it's like an additional part of that. So like maybe you'll post a few photos on your site, but then you can post even more photos on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Right? And then talking about the photos, because your videos are pretty high quality, right? So would you say quality is important to get engagement?
Right. I don't think so. You know, with content, it's just such a crazy game. I mean, my approach is not right or wrong, but it's not the same approach that a lot of other people will have. So like, for example, my friend Kevin Lee, right? He's has a huge account on Instagram. And a lot of the content that he does is like really simple, like, hey, like watch this really quick, like 10-second video. And it's like, you know, the Rubik's Cube gets solved like right away. And it's someone else filming for him. And it's not like he's doing this incredible sleight of hand and stuff, right? Not to knock on his sleight of hand. It's great. But the kind of content he does is just different, right? For me, it's gotten to a point where a lot of it is just impromptu sleight of hand kind of stuff, where like it's just a lot of these moves and kind of creatively using it where I'm not being what we call a move monkey, which is like you're just a sleight of hand enthusiast. You're not a magician. You're not a showman. Yeah. So I'm like kind of combining those two, where I am doing like difficult sleight of hand and trying to execute it perfectly, but also making it interesting and having a presentation around it. So it's like it's different. And yeah, my content does tailor to magicians because they would appreciate the kind of stuff that I'm putting out the most. But I'm still using these certain hashtags and things that will get anybody that's looking to book a magician to find me first in New York.
So would you, the hashtags, would you say is like anyone can use them, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's not like you made them up. Like, yeah, you can make one for Dennis Kim and then everything is under that for you.
Yeah. Right.
But the hashtag is more tailored to event, you know, or just people who would hire, you know, performers, I guess. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just kind of like researching the hashtags. Like if you just go to like the search bar and you see like the hashtags, if you just like type anything in and just test things out, like hashtag New York. Oh, wow. That has 48 million tags. There's no way anyone's going to see this. How about NYC Magic? Huh? 1.1 million posts that use that hashtag. Less competitive, so to speak. So that if I were to use that hashtag, it's highly likely that people will see me through that than if I did hashtag New York, because that's such a broad thing. But at the same time, I'm not doing something too specific like New York City Asian magician. Like, what? That's too specific. No one's so it's like trying to figure out that middle ground.
Yeah, because I feel the confusion for some people is the bigger the hashtag, the more eyes will see it, which I guess, we're no pros, but like logically it makes sense because there's a ton of people on there who are looking at it. But at the same time, there's so many people looking at it, you'll appear very quickly and then disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it ends up being a numbers game. It's like, I'm not going to post one thing and then pray that that's going to be my saving grace. Right. It's like, it's this lifelong journey. I feel you're posting like several times a week. And then there's a period of time where you're just kind of done with it. You're kind of burnt out. You don't post for a while. And then you come back to it with a different approach.
Yeah.
That's kind of how life is.
For me, would you say, for me, posting on social media, I never want it to be a job ever. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Would you say post what you like? Because I've heard, you know, I've seen, like, I remember when I was posting a lot, when I had like a job, I was just, you know, I'm just sitting at a desk and I'm just bored because I finished some of the work and I'm just trying to kill time. And I remember I made this post once where I had made a coin disappear using like smoke and everything. And I just posted it. Just, I'm like, hey, this is cool. Just posted it on Instagram. And it was done. And then it got a huge engagement. And I was like, what? Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why did I get a huge engagement?
Right.
And I realized it's because I liked it. So I must be like an unconscious thing where, oh, he looks like he's enjoying himself doing this thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like compared to someone who's like trying to post something just because they feel like they have to post and they just made it right now just because I got to post something, mm-hmm. you know, today.
Totally. I think it's very, very easy to get a sense of the inner workings of someone's mind when you're watching their content. You know, I'll admit for myself too, there was a period of time where I just kept going through the motions with the same kind of trajectory of the kind of content I was doing. And I was feeling kind of like not satisfied with it, but I was doing it anyways. And those are the posts that got the least engagement, where it's like the same as the videos I was doing before, but I wasn't putting heart in it. And it's just, it's like this unconscious thing. Like, it wasn't that the content was lower quality or anything. It just, I don't know. It's just like this kind of a universal kind of energy, I suppose. that you can kind of just sense from people if they're being genuine, if they're happy with it, right? And when I'm really stoked about a piece of content, oh man, it drives up all the engagement, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird.
And you don't have, because I know some performers or some people on Instagram, they have someone who follows them with a camera, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't do any of that. You don't have.
I don't, but I will say that when I was growing my Instagram, you know, in the past year and a half or so, I would ask my friends to film me, and you're one of them too. You're one of the people that I've come to the most because you're very good with filming, you know, and videography and all that. You have all the equipment and the experience on doing that part. And I wanted to highlight also, this is another thing, I wanted to highlight like live performances because I was a head entertainer at the Museum of Illusions in downtown Manhattan for about like 8 months or so. And I was getting great reactions. And I wanted to showcase on my Instagram that, look, I don't just do magic for the camera. I actually perform for real people too. And I know how to engage with them and be a showman in front of them. I wanted to show that so the people that want to hire me, they'll see, oh, he doesn't just do these Instagram videos. He actually is a performer. I want him for my event, you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because some people, I think, even though you do magic to the camera, they might just automatically assume you do magic for people. But it is also good to show of, you know, you performing for people. And I think that's just any industry that deals with people, you should have some sort of content that shows either a photo or video of you interacting with the people you interact with for your thing.
Yeah. And kind of like tying back to your other question about like, oh, like, should I just be posting like what I want to? I do think so. I think that the path that I took with the social media route is not for everybody. I don't think it is. For me, I saw the potential in me to be able to use that to my advantage. But that doesn't mean that that's the only way. There are so many other ways. And I know that you don't take that approach. And you've been doing this for years now. And you've been doing it pretty much full time. So it's like there are different ways of which pursuing this unconventional career path works. It's just what works for you. And in terms of social media, like, yeah, you just post about you and who you are and what makes you happy. And that's all that really matters. It's not really so much the numbers and like all these people that are trying to, especially younger people that want to chase this sort of a clout, so to speak.
Yeah.
They want to be a celebrity. They want the big lights on them. And they don't realize that if you're not the kind of person that's going to have that, then one, you're not going to get there. And two, you're not going to like it when you start to get a taste of it.
Yeah. I think
so there's a lot of things with it.
I think the saying is, when it comes to success, like different fears. And I think one of them is fear of success, which was that kind of people where, oh, I want it so badly. So, okay. They work hard. They get the opportunity. They get it. Now they're this big thing. And now they have all this attention and now they hate it because they can't handle it. And now they're scared of like, oh my God. And you know, that may stop them too. Just the thought of, okay, yeah, I want to do this. And then all of a sudden they get 10,000 followers. Now they're getting all this response from like everyone for gigs and you know, interviews and podcast stuff. And now they don't like it. And now they don't know how to handle it. And that kind of scares them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, like you said, they just have to make sure that's what they want, because if you can't handle it, why, you know, it might sound good in your head, but once it really happens, what are you going to do?
Right. It's like trying to go back to what was your why in the first place.
Yeah.
And now you're here. It kind of makes you realize, like, like DJ Khaled, when he says suffering from success, like in his album, it's like, that sounds ridiculous. But then once you get to a certain point, you're like, I think I get it. Like, you get to a certain place, you climb to the top of the mountain, you see the view, and then all of a sudden it's not what you thought it would be.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 That's what I get responses to sometimes from, like, old friends who came out of nowhere because now they've seen me on TV or they've seen me photos on set and stuff. And because, you know, I also do acting work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I get responses, oh, you know, that sounds like so much fun. It looks so cool. You know, how can I do that? You know, it'd be so awesome. I'm like, you sure you want to do it? Because it's a lot of work and different personalities, because you're going to get a ton of different personalities
when
you're working in, I think, entertainment in general. I mean, I think any job, but, like, specifically entertainment, it's a lot of personalities. Like, I'm sure you've met people who are like, what is wrong with you? Like, you're missing some screws in your head.
Definitely a lot of people that can be on the eccentric side and a little bit colorful with their personality, for sure.
For sure.
It's all theatrics and, you know, that kind of department. Yeah,
and sometimes they're just putting on a show. You said for Instagram videos, what I really meant was, like, should it be, like, pixelated?
Right. Honestly, it doesn't have to be super high quality, you know.
Like, you don't need, like a Canon C300, which, for those of you who don't know what that is, I'm sure you don't know what that is. It's a really high-end camera. It costs, like, tens of thousands of dollars. You could just use your phone nowadays, right?
Yeah. And I've done that. And I don't always use my phone because I know I could have better quality with the camera that I have. It's just a little Sony RX 100 Mark V, which is a higher-end compact camera, so that it's kind of easy to use. I don't need to learn about different lenses and things like that. But it definitely helps to have higher quality content, of course, especially with this whole, like, ADD culture of, like, scrolling newsfeed. And, like, if you don't like a video for, like, 0.5 seconds, you just go on to the next one.
Yeah.
And a higher quality video will catch your eye. But I don't think it's necessary. I think, especially with the smartphones that everyone has these days, like, it's good enough as long as you're not being sloppy. And also as long as you're being concise with your content and understanding the medium that you're putting this content out for. Like, the videos that you put up on YouTube are not going to do the same, like, in terms of performance and engagement as on Instagram. Instagram, you want really short form stuff. I know there's IGTV and all that. So that's changing kind of the dynamic of Instagram, and we'll see where that goes because it's still relatively new. But, you know, it's different platforms, different. It's just like what you're saying, like, why Instagram compared to, like, Facebook or Twitter. And I didn't find the dynamics of the engagement on those platforms to fit what I was trying to do. Like, Twitter, I'm not going to be putting out my opinions and statements and that's it, and being known for that. It doesn't make sense to me.
I feel like Twitter, oh, hold on a second. Let me just press this button here real quick. All right, cool. Now, just making sure my mic wasn't muted because I thought I muted it by accident. I feel Twitter is more just a conversation starter type of thing. People just want to make their opinions on there. And at the same time, I feel there's a lot of negativity in Twitter. Like, oh, you want to start a problem with conversations and drama? Go on Twitter, because everyone also has an opinion on there. But I also feel like, because I follow some
people
from YouTube who are on Twitter, and it's just your following. If you're nice, your following is probably going to be nice, and it's just all good and dandy.
It's more of like, if you have something to say that a lot of other people are going to agree with, and usually it's being brave about, like, being outspoken about certain things, then you will end up having a following on Twitter. I'm not the type of person to be like that or to contend with others on issues and controversial stuff, which is the whole thing on Twitter. I'm not going to be using that platform. I'm more valued, so to speak, as someone putting out, hey, this is an idea from my mind that I'm putting out into reality. Here it is.
Yeah.
That's more of what I go with. So
cool. So to top off quality video content on Instagram, doesn't matter what you use, just enjoy it, right?
As long as it's not a brick, you know, a camera made of Legos or something, or Nokia, like back in the 90s.
Oh, and double check what you're doing before you post on Instagram. right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
We've seen so many videos where it's, they're like, oh yes, it's awesome, but dude, you flashed like really, like, I don't care if you flash a little bit, because to the naked eye who's not a magician, they won't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But to, if your market is, if you're following is a ton of magicians, make sure it's clean.
Absolutely. And I don't know if I want to go into a whole like different subtopic in it, but that's one of the stresses of being a magician on Instagram. You know, it, like my brother's a musician and he's been doing, being a musician professionally for 11 years now out in LA. And he posts on Instagram, he could just post that he wrote a song or he's doing a cover of a song and it's great. Right. And a lot of other musicians can do the same thing. But if you're off key or you play like a wrong note in a chord for like a second, for just a second, no one's going to say, you messed up right there. A major chord, you played like a whatever, you know, it's not going to be like that. But with magic, even one frame of a flash, somebody's going to say something and it's going to be annoying.
Yeah.
And so it begs the question of like, well, what kind of magic am I supposed to do to this, for this medium? You have to tailor your magic to what you're doing. So like real life, like walk around magic is different from TV magic. And there's a reason for that. Same with Instagram. So
that's a whole other thing that we could get into maybe in another episode.
Absolutely.
I guess it's also a good segue of what you're doing now, right? We won't get too much into the difference between real live performances and TV, because I get a lot of questions like that too. I don't do TV magic per se, besides just acting work, but I do get told, oh, you should, you know, I'm sure you get it too, you should get on TV with like Penn and Teller or Fool Us or America's Got Talent.
All the time.
We always get the same, we usually have our usual answers like, yeah, you know, you don't understand.
Like, yeah, of course, one day.
That's a whole other episode, but I guess that's a good segue to what you're doing now. Because so you went from your job to teaching magic for a while, and then suddenly like, hey, I want to do this, or really try to do this for a living. Contacted a few people, contacted me. Gave you a bunch of random information that either works or might work or might not work, and just ran with it, and now you're where you are now.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was performing at the Museum of Illusions. I was kind of the head entertainer there, and I was also curating my Instagram, putting out all these videos of me doing magic for the camera and also live performances, little snippets and stuff, and just getting more photos with you, Rich, for doing like photography sessions and hanging out, just like build the Instagram and also the website just to make things look more professional. And during that period of time, I think it was late March of last year, 2019, I was contacted by John Stessel. And for those of you who don't know that, he's a pretty big, social media guy when it comes to magic. And so he contacted me and said, you know, hey, do you want to consult as for Dan White's show? You know, Dan White has a residency out at the Nomad Hotel, 28th and Broadway out in Manhattan, and they've been having that show for 5 years now. But you know, so last year he contacted me saying that I need to step down from my role to pursue some other stuff, and I need to bring someone else in. And he said that, you know, I was the first one in his mind to take his place. And so I, you know, that was, the rest of it was history. Now I still work with a team over at Theory 11, you know, Dan White and some others. And I just consulted for his 12th Jimmy Fallon appearance that just aired 2 days ago. And that was pretty wild for me. And for me to get to this point, I attribute a lot of that to social media, because without that exposure, someone like John would not have seen the kind of work that I do. And he's someone that I've only met once prior to that conversation for like 5 minutes, and he wouldn't have known anything else about me if not for Instagram. So now I work with, you know, Dan and the team doing this magic show.
I guess you could say, when it comes to like the magicians you hang out with, the performers you hang out with, it's a very small group. It's not like you hang out with like 20 guys all the time. There's, but you have like a select group that you always go to all the time. You hang out with all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So among that group, for some of the people in the group, because I think I'm one of them.
Oh, totally, man. You're up there.
I know we've spoken within the group, and we all have this assumption that among all of us, I think you and I are one. I think the only real workers per se. The other guys are just starting out, so
they're trying to get their foot in the door with it.
Yeah, but I think among everyone else, compared between you and I we feel like you went from, hey, I want to do this, to next thing you know, you have like the steady job doing magic, which for some people it's like a dream. So to them, mm-hmm. they think like, oh, you just got really lucky. Would you say you got really lucky, or it's just like meeting, being ready
mm-hmm.
and putting the work in for it? I mean.
Right. I think I get your question.
Yeah. I guess like being ready and having, you know, when the opportunity is there, can you handle it? Do you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, this has been something I would think about a lot ever since I got the job to work and be a part of the team for this magic show. And at first I thought I'm just getting lucky. You know, I was really struggling with imposter syndrome for the last year because I'd be working with all these very, very well-known and respected magicians, you know, like Dan White. I've known about him since I was a kid, and he's put
stuff like completely out of the blue too. You just like
out of the blue. Yeah. Yeah. And Robert Smith, he's a great, like I've known of the things he's put out on the market. He's a great inventor and creator of magic, and to be working alongside them and also get to know them as coworkers and friends. I felt like I was not the person that was supposed to fill the shoes of someone like Stessel. And so I thought, okay, I just got lucky. I'm just someone that's, you know, but I thought about it. And when I think, if I'm being really honest, like I'm really competitive about stuff, like really, really competitive. And in my mind, I had this invisible competitor that I was always trying to get ahead of. And I always wanted to prove to the world that I can do something as unconventional as this. And it helped that one of my older brothers, Norman, is a musician and has been doing it out in LA.
And pretty successful. Yes.
Very successful. Like very.
He's done music for TV commercials and movies.
His first starting role was writing music for Dexter, the TV show, The Serial Killer.
Yeah.
You know, and he'd be coming back home. We watched one of the episodes. He's like, I wrote this line right here. It's like, that's weird, you know?
Yeah. So I think having that already as something to look at is, I think, helps build that mindset, especially growing up and seeing that, you know, compared to like other people who don't have that, I guess you can say, opportunity or luck to have that within the family, so to speak. That literally will build your mindset.
Yeah. There's
no fear of failing because, like, well, he's kind of doing similar things just with music. It kind of works the same thing. You know, you do your gigs or you work in, you know, a company and doing the same stuff, but it's music. And if he can do it and be successful and he's doing it in the TV and film world, that's already hard in itself. Then, of course, his magic thing is going to work out. I'm sure that's
right.
Popping in your head.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, it's like knowing the right people. And for me, fortunately, it's someone that I grew up with. He's, you know, my brother. Yeah. And so I've taken a lot of, you know, I look up to him as a mentor as well. And one of the bits of advice that he gave me, because I was really drowning myself with like every second of my day, I need to be doing something. What am I doing to push my career forwards? And I couldn't just sit and be like, oh, I did enough for today. I think I deserve a break. No. I had to reinvent my mind where I'm all about magic now. My free time, so to speak, I should still be doing magic because that's what I used to do when magic was just a hobby. On my free time, I look forward to working on magic, right? And now I'm in this whole thing where I need to also make a livable income off of magic. And that's the hard thing that makes you able to be full-time, right? Can you make a full-time income off of this? And in order to do that, you need to do a lot of work. And when I was talking to my brother, it was a little under a year ago. He was visiting home and we're talking about this. And, you know, I just brought them to see Dan's show, right? And they loved it and everything. But he said, you know, one of the goals that you should have is to make $1,000 a week. $1,000 a week doing magic means $52,000 a year pre-tax. Like, that's not really a lot if you compare it to like a desk job, you know?
No job.
But in order to get to $1,000 a week doing magic, that's so much that you have to do. And that was my goal. And then, you know, I was like, I'm going to make that happen. And when it does, I'm going to tell them. And I did. And I've been making $1,000 a week. And I'm like, and in order to get there, you have to do so much with magic. So I worked so hard to do as much with my time that's going to push me. I always had that question in the back of my mind. What am I doing right now that is pushing me forwards? And to be honest, I have gotten very neurotic about it. And I've stressed myself out a lot, excessively over this. But I attribute a lot of that to getting me to this point, you know. And when I tell John, when we talk, like, you know, back and forth, you know, I just FaceTime with him like last week. I told him, dude, I'm still so thankful that you brought me into this position, that you're right. This has changed the trajectory of my career entirely. And he always tells me, like, dude, this is not a mistake. Like, I knew, I saw something in you. And it's not a mistake. It's not luck. I didn't just pick someone. I didn't just, like, pull a name out of a hat. Like, I knew that you had what it takes to make sure that the show goes well. And admittedly, for the past year, I've made sure that this show goes as smoothly as possible. Yeah. After learning the ropes and all that.
A few. Oh crap! I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, it's all the learning.
And remember, you were like in the middle of the show, and you were like, "Yeah, yeah." Oh crap! I missed a cue.
Yeah, dude. And I get burned for it, you know. Yeah. Post show, it's like, dude, what are you doing? It's like, I'm sorry.
Any job, you know,
when it gets stressful.
You get used to it, and then you just chill, and then you're like, nope, gotta focus. Yep. But I think if anyone's listening to this, it doesn't matter what field you work in. What you said is kind of like my same mindset. I'm very competitive. I'm also very laid back, but in my mind, I'm very competitive. Like, I want to be the best every time, right? And I have to make it work, or else. I think we had this conversation once. Like, I was like, this has to work. It, or else I have to like figure something else out, which there's nothing else to do besides making this work. There's no plan B, basically.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of the Secret type of thing. You know, remember when that came out? Whole big talk on it where they don't really explain a lot of stuff. It's not how it is from what they explained in the video. But I feel that's kind of how it is, where you, when you focus on something so much, you get like tunnel vision, where now I forgot what it's called, where when you're not aware of it, but when suddenly when someone mentions it, suddenly it's everywhere, you know. Psychology. But that's kind of what it is. You're so focused on making this work that it has to work. You're gonna figure it out in some way, shape, or form. Something's gonna come up that's gonna be like, hey, this is it. And you're gonna know. You're like, oh yeah, no, this, yeah, I gotta do this. This is what I've been waiting for.
Yeah, it's like it's weird. It's like the law of attraction.
Basically,
right?
Yeah,
it's really what it is.
What it is. Like, I think, like I said, out of this whole thing, that's what you just explained is what I try to tell everyone every single time. Like, I remember being a kid, and probably no one in my family would remember this, but like, I remember this vividly. Being a kid, I remember Terminator just came out, right? And they were showing us one special on HBO or something like that, where you would see the movie, and then at the end, they'll take you behind the scenes and kind of show you how it all works. And I was so excited for that. And I'm like, oh my God, that sounds like an awesome job, right? Like, I can't believe that's a job. Like, no one's wearing a suit in these videos behind this, and they're all just in regular clothes, and they're just like, hey, go run because someone's chasing you and you're running through fire and all. I'm like, that's an awesome job, right?
Yeah.
As a kid, I'm like, I want that. I don't want anything else. I want that, right?
Right.
I remember in my head, I said, I have to work in entertainment, more TV and film, ideally, but it just has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, I was young. And it isn't until now where I can finally say, hey, I'm working on TV sets. I'm working on movie sets. And on top of that, I'm making money as a magician, which also opens doors to like things like that too.
Right. Very related field.
It's that focus of I have to do this. I'm going to figure it out. Right.
And yeah.
Really just letting nothing stop you and just making it happen. And you're going to get people who try and stop you.
Like, oh, totally.
I'm sure you get a ton of people even to today who are like, you know, you should try something else because it's probably not gonna last long.
Yeah. And that's one of the frustrating components of it. Like, especially, I guess, I don't want to go too off on a tangent, but like me being Asian American, first generation Asian American, where, you know, like my mom she's an immigrant to America. And so, of course, a lot of us have this same experience among other Asian Americans where it's like, you got to be a doctor or a lawyer. You got to go into like STEM, you know, something science related or law or, you know, something that's very revered, quote unquote. And for me to say like, hey, I want to do magic. It's like, what the hell is that? What's magic? And it took,
You want to do what?
Yeah. And you know, my brother was telling me this yesterday too. He's like, dude, I, you know, didn't think that being a magician was really ever a viable option. But he's like, dude, like, but I'm proud of you. Like, I just watched the Fallon spot and like, you worked on that. Like, good job, dude. And it's like, yeah, man, like it sounds ridiculous. And just like what I was saying before, like, yeah, like Job from Arrested Development, he's like this failed magician. And it's like this comedic thing. It's kind of like a running joke. You want to be a magician, you're going to end up failing and you're going to end up doing something else and hating your life. But it only took getting on the show with Dan and bringing my family to see the show for them to realize, okay, this guy can do it.
You got
to
show the proof. Yeah.
Yeah. Same with Kevin Lee. But, you know, he was telling me that it took for him to fool Penn and Teller that time that he did last year for his family to finally be like, okay, let's let him pursue this full time.
Proof for me kind of was like a viable option, like you said, was when I met another magician by accident on a bus in Jersey City. And we kind of ended up having a magic battle because everyone on the bus kind of found out that we were both magicians. And and he introduced me to a bunch of magicians in Jersey City who were professional magicians. Like, these were all kid performers. That's all they did, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I saw how much money they were making, which at the time, even now, if you think about it, it's not that much, but it really is a lot of money if you think about it per hour, you know, because they're like, some of them were averaging maybe $300-$500 for the hour, right? Perform, which is the usual thing for, you know, performing an event. You shouldn't really be there for longer than two or three, right? But when I saw them, like, because there's times where like everyone's like exchanging money because everyone, but they would have like a chicken wing night, right? And you know, they would all exchange money, and I see these guys like whip out wads of cash, like hundreds, and I'm like, what? Who are you?
Right?
Where's all this money coming from? And it's because they were making money from being a magician, and I was like, oh, so that's a thing. I can have that much money in my pocket. So for me, that was the proof. It was seeing actual professionals, you know, actually have money and be able to do it for a living, and that's all they do. And some of them were still teachers in school, but a lot of the other ones, that's all they did, right? But yeah, I mean, that was the proof. And I guess, what is it? The proof in the pudding or something like that? I don't know.
The proof in the pudding.
I don't know.
Pudding of proof. I like that.
You mentioned earlier as well, networking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel that networking was kind of like important for you to get started? And if you've ever been like to actual networking events to kind of like, do you still do gigs now? Because for a lot of magicians who do just gigs like myself, we do a lot of the times you might find some of them at networking events or like all these where there's people gatherings just so that they
can
pass out their business card, so to speak.
Right.
Is that something you do or not.
Or not as much. Yeah, I mean, I know you and I have talked about like going to certain networking events in the past, and we never really like followed through with it. Same with a couple of my other friends. You know, I have other like photography friends that go to a lot of these like networking events and would invite me, and I would never go. And I think the reason why I never went to those, like physically go to these actual networking events and things, is because I think that my time was being allocated enough to expanding my network in the direction that I knew I had to go. So I knew that I met enough of the important people, so to speak, in my life to push me forward in my career based on where I was in that period of time. So for example, I met you and I learned a lot from you, and I still learn a lot from you about getting the gigs and, you know, just like the photography tips, the videography, the content. Yeah, the content too, like you helped me a lot with that. And locking down the gigs and stuff, and continuing with like, now it's like website and the SEO and stuff. So it's like, I'm already learning a lot, like almost like more than I can chew. And so for me to go and now try to create new circles of people at these networking events where I'm meeting new people, I don't need to meet any more new people in my life at this point. I'm busy enough with the circle that I have, and I'm meeting people through their circles. You know what I mean?
But would you say the networking, because I feel like the networking that's done by people who go to these things is not really to be surrounded by them and keep them in circle. For them, is more looking for new business.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And if this is
compared to what you were saying, it's kind of what you're saying is kind of more like building a circle of kind of friends or people that you can go to for questions, compared to like I'm not going to hire you for a gig.
Right. I get you. I would have to say that it's tough for me to say, because my approach has always been through social media.
Yeah.
But for anyone else,
like your networking right there. I mean, social media now is like the new networking.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do think it's important. I think I'm actually pretty curious about actually going to one of these networking events and seeing how effective it is. But to me, and this might just be my ignorance due to my naivete in this, but like handing out a million business cards just to never be called back about, you know, and it just, to me, doesn't seem like it's worth my time. And I always value my time.
Yeah.
And if there's just this one, if
I've never been a fan of networking events, I've only been to a very few of them. And it's very, because you're, everyone there knows that everyone there is trying to find other people to do business with.
Right? Mm-hmm.
For me, I feel a good, in my opinion, good networking for me is you're just among people hanging out and bonding.
Right.
And at the end, oh, what do? I'm a magician. Oh, what? Yo, show me a trick. Oh, dude, that's awesome. Yeah, what do? Oh, I work for this company. Dude, look, take my card. You know, send it to HR or something if you're ever down for
stuff. Right.
But now they know you, they're friends. They're going to give a good word, but it's not like, oh, hey, you know, what's up? What do you do? Oh, okay. Yeah, I do this. Yeah. Let's work together. Mm-hmm. I don't know you.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I think effective networking is not what we're taught at school, that you got to go to these networking events, you got to dress nicely, bring your business cards, bring your resume, shove your life into anyone that you have the courage to walk up to. I don't think that that is the effective way of networking. I think if you want to network effectively, you need to just find the people that are, and this might sound a little bit like selfish, but it's not, I don't mean to make it that way. But like, if you see somebody that you think you can get something out of them more or like learn from them, right? This is why I'm prefacing this with saying that I'm not just in it to get things out of people and take advantage of them. It's, you got to envision that this person is going to be a valuable part to your endeavor in whatever it's going to be. And it's a bonus to make a great friendship out of them. Like, I learned so much from you, Rich, but we have had so many laughs. We hang out and we just die laughing almost every time we hang out about something. It's like the best times. We have like the best memories, dude.
We have to do a podcast on all the conspiracy talks and get Watkins.
Oh, we got so much to talk about. Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
Dude, you get intense. But this is what I mean. Like, I make great friendships with the people that I also learn from. It's like killing two birds with one stone. When we're hanging out, we're not just hanging out for the sake of hanging out. For me, I used to do that all the time. Like in college, I was a big partier, to be honest. And I'll like drink a lot, I'd party a lot, meet a bunch of new people, this and that. And I knew I had to cut that out of my life. to pursue this and make my career successful. So when we hang out, you and I hang out, we're not just hanging out. Yeah, we're having fun, but at the same time, we're also doing something creative and fun and cool. And it's something that we could put out. We're doing videos, we're doing photos, we're pushing each other's career forwards while also having fun with it. And I think that's sort of the important aspect to it. Instead of trying to meet new people, hey, if you want to hire me for a gig, here's my business card. You hang out like 50 business cards. Maybe you get one or two calls. That's not worth it for a whole night there.
And for me, like, I used to do a bunch of the one question I got, I this might be for another podcast episode, but like, I guess just brush it on a little bit. The one thing I got a lot was, how do I get gigs? I'm just starting out. You know, I don't have an email list and this and that and all that. I'm like, I did open, what is it? Open mics.
Right.
For a long time. Like, I went to a ton of open mics for free. I didn't get paid. Right. I met this one guy who was really nice, and he was nice enough to, at the end, pay me like $25, you know, or like sometimes if he was really nice, $50, or if there was a really big crowd that night, a little more than that, but it was never more than $50, $75, if anything, $50. Right. But usually it's been like $20, $25, enough for ride home. Right. On the train.
Right.
But open mics for me was a good thing. For me, that's networking. You just go perform for fun. Don't expect anything.
Like, right.
I think that's the biggest mistake people have when, yeah, like you said, have a goal in mind, right? $1,000 a week. I told it, I have a whiteboard that I can show you that right now is on hold because of the situation. Like, you know, I have like have $1,500 a week in my account, have X amount on in savings and this and that and all these little mini stuff. But the mistake is, I feel like you can't go to these things and expect something to happen. That's when you start letting yourself down. Again, there's a certain, you know, I wish Maliki was here because he would know all the terms. There's a certain term for that where like you set an expectation for something, and then when you go do it, you envisioned what that was, but it's not what you envisioned it to be.
Right, right.
Nothing like that. You get so upset. Even though you're doing what you're doing, it's just not what you envisioned, and now you're upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get let down if we have unmet expectations.
Yeah,
for sure.
I prepare as if it's the most important thing ever, but at the same time, when it's time to go do it, I always lower the expectation of what these events or situations are going to be like. So when I get there, I'm prepared with some like really killer magic, right? That I know is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. And I envision it to be like, oh my God, it's going to be amazing. So I look my best. But then when I get there, I'm like, on the way there, I'm like, no, it's probably going to be crap. It's going to be the worst location ever, bad crowd. But I'm ready just in case it does come out the way I see it in my head.
Right. Right. That way you're not disappointed by it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And like going back to like networking, I guess more, I guess I was talking about networking with people that aren't directly going to give you business, but you're right. You know, that is a huge component of networking where networking, it's kind of out of our control too. Effective networking. You know, for me, a lot of the networking that I've done to directly get me business, like getting gigs and different things like corporate events and even birthday parties and for kids birthday parties and all that, a lot of it happened when I was working at the Museum of Illusions. I was not going to work thinking, how many business cards am I going to hand out today? Sometimes it was zero, sometimes it was like 15. And I never ever put that on other people, and I've only handed them out when people ask. And because I knew that if they're asking, then they are serious in wanting to follow
There's
up
something
potentially.
Something going on in their head that says, hmm, I might use them. And sometimes, because I used to, Paul Daniels in his video on business magic or whatever, there's a funny thing in the trailer. He asks everyone, who has business cards? And everyone raises their hand. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and you know, everyone's like confident, like, yeah, I got it. Yeah, because you think if you don't, you're going to look bad. And everyone's like, yeah.
Right.
Got it. And he just goes, why? And you're like, what? Why do you still have business cards? Are they on you? Yeah. Why? They should be in everyone else's hands, which to me, that's a really good like mindset to have. if you have business cards in your pocket when you get home, you've done something wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can get out to everyone when you're going around, but at the same time, I feel like it's just there's I don't know. It's like it's kind of like what you said. Unless they ask, there's a reason why they're asking. Like usually, if you're starting a conversation with somebody, and then you get into what do you do? You're a magician. Almost every single time, they'll ask for your business card.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Like that time you were on the train the way back home, you were just doing card tricks. That guy just saw you. It was like 2 a.m. And then
I was just thinking of that instance. And it was funny because that time I actually took my business cards out of my bag because when I go to work, I realize there's no need for it and it's taking up space. And I took it out that day. And when he asked for one, I was like, I kid you not, I took it out this morning.
Yeah.
I always have it on me, but not today.
Yeah.
It's a lesson to be learned, you know?
Always have at least five. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, always. Only 100.
You have like five.
Like a whole stack of it.
Got one in this pocket, one in my bag, I got one in my jacket. Got one
in every pocket of the wallet.
One on the lining of the hat as well.
One in my phone case. Like, yeah, dude.
But I
think there's definitely different approaches, and all of them, there isn't just one right.
No.
And wrong, you know?
These are all like, just tips and things from other people that they've tried. It doesn't mean it's going to
work 100%
mm-hmm. of the time.
Yeah.
There's no secret. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, being you as a person.
Right. Like there's different approaches. Like I'm thinking of like trying to hand out as many business cards as I can as a numbers game. It's kind of akin to cold calling, right? Not every cold call is going to be effective, but you might get one or two.
Yeah.
And that's the point of it. It's a numbers game. And then there's also others that are naysayers of cold calling that are like, oh, you should only contact your warm market.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the way that I personally approach things with business cards. You know, like I'm only going to give it to you if it's going to be worth it to exchange, my contact information.
I kind of see the same way. I used to believe it is still a numbers game, but
absolutely.
I forgot where is it that I read that spoke about like converting like cold people to warm,
mm-hmm.
and using that approach. I forgot where it was, but it made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
And your chances of them booking you or wanting to work with you, and this is any field, is a lot higher because you're not a stranger anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we're already like over an hour in because we started what, like a 4? I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So let's
wrap it up.
Start wrapping up. We spoke a lot of crap in here.
Mm-hmm. It's good, man. The lengthy podcast episode.
Yeah,
I mean, we talked about a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, my last podcast was just myself, and that was so weird.
It's tough. I can imagine it's
very tough. And this is it's a brand new platform for me because for me, I've always felt like it was really cool to have a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the closest thing. So. Yeah. I think it's pretty cool to have and have. Who do you think? Okay, so, all right. So let's do this. Let's top it off, real quick. Three questions and then a pop question.
From you to me, or
yeah, from me to you, or vice versa. We could do either or. I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. Okay, I'm a guest on your podcast. I don't know. Okay.
So we're both guests. Who knows? I might not really. This might not be me. Maybe it's someone else.
Oh, that's the real illusion.
The idea, you know, Descartes and all his philosophy on everything you see is not real.
But yeah.
But okay, so summarize your top three. I guess if someone says, "What I want to start, what should I do?" Or since I would say you're I consider myself, you're like the Instagram magician, right? Like that's your platform. That's what you do. That's how I see it. So if someone says, I want to do what you do on Instagram or get to where you are on Instagram, what top three things would you say?
Oh man. When it comes to Instagram, I'll say that Instagram has been a great proponent to my career. And so you should only be asking that question if you want to end up possibly opening up other doors of opportunity. I don't pursue Instagram to, you know, have clout, you know, quote unquote, or to be revered or have all this attention. Like, I don't care about that stuff. If anything, it makes me uncomfortable. So you have to really reevaluate what your why is and be really genuine about it. If you kind of like the idea that a lot of people are going to be seeing your stuff and it's going to be good and all that, like, that why is going to end up changing. You're going to be miserable for a period of time, because I was. So keep that in mind. Two, so you are past that why and it's like, okay, yes, I understand that I can open doors of opportunity through Instagram. You got to make good content. And what does that mean? What does good content mean? It means different things for between me and you and like Shin Lim and John Stessel and Kevin Lee and all these other, it means entirely different things. And it's like, it's this journey of self-discovery. What is your brand? You know, when someone asks you what your brand is, it's like, I don't know, dude. My brand is just me, but who am I? What am I? What is the work that I do, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you will be able to answer that question as time goes on with Instagram, and it's a journey and you have to enjoy the process. Sounds very Gary V-like, but it's true. You have to trust the process and just do what's in your heart, because if you are pursuing magic, that means, well, you're trusting your heart. And so you should keep going that path. Keep trusting your gut, keep trusting your heart, and whatever feels right, put it out there. And then you can start to correct things if you need to refine your approach and stuff. And three, besides enjoying the process, like, just understand that it's a long grind, man. Like, this is why there's that term of like get rich quick scheme. You know, it's the same thing. There's no shortcut. Like, look, I'm at like 7,600 followers right now, you know, 7,600. It's
break 8,000.
I'm going to hit 8,000 maybe in some time. I don't know, but it's a small amount relative to other people. Right. Oh, yeah. And so if I were to compare myself with like Shin Lim, I'd be like, oh, I'm dirt. Right. But that's not the way to look at it. I have this conversation with one of my other friends, Alan from Brazil. He's a 19-year-old magician. He has 15,000 followers. And I told him, like, when he asked me this, it doesn't matter. I don't care if I have 8K, if I was stuck at 2K, 3K. I don't care if I end up at 20K. It doesn't change my work. All I'm using social media for is to open up opportunities for me to do great work. And look, I work with people that I've looked up to when I was a kid. You know, one of my favorite magicians, Danny Garcia, I ended up hanging out with him and working on a trade show with him for a week in Vegas. It's like, for me to be able to get to that point, did I need 20,000 followers or anything? No, it doesn't matter. And so if social media is going to end up being your primary work, like people like Kevin Lee and whatnot, you know, then sure, you know, but you have to understand the why. So I think those are kind of like my three points. And even like Kevin, I'm not trying to be ignorant. I'm sure that he also uses social media as a catalyst to do great work. But, you know, I digress. It's just a whole lot of, it's just really understanding your why. Why do you want to do it? And are you willing to put in the work where you're going to have weeks and weeks and weeks where you're getting no results? And I know people that are getting really frustrated with not getting the results on Instagram. And I don't mean to be harsh, but hey, man, if you're not getting the attention, there's a reason. I'm sorry, but not everyone's cut out to be some sort of a social media person. Like, I'm not the type of person that's going to have 100,000 people following me, right? But I'm also the type of person that's going to be in that mid-range. Like, I will be at like 10K or so. I will be at some point. But it's like, are you willing to change yourself also to adapt to that endeavor? There's a lot of these questions, but it really boils down to why.
And this doesn't just go towards Instagram. It's like any platform.
Absolutely. Right?
Mm-hmm. Like, if someone wanted to be like, oh, I want a big fan page on Facebook, or I want a big Twitter following, or I want a big YouTube thing. It's just,
There's a great quote by one of my favorite motivational speakers, Eric Thomas. And he said, you don't get out of life what you want. You get out of life who you are. And I kind of didn't understand what that meant until I kept listening to him saying that. And it finally clicked that you can say that you want a big following. You could say you want to make a livable income off of an unconventional career path. You could say that you want this and that, and not just career. You want to have a nice fit body. You want to have a better diet. You want to have, you know, be more kind. You want to be a better person, or whatever that means. But you're not going to get it by just saying you want it. You got to be the type of person to have those things. And then when you end up being that type of person, you don't think about, I want, I want, I want. You just become that. So I'm the type of person that is a full-time magician. Same with you, Rich. You're the type of person that does this full-time. We didn't just get here by saying, I want, and that's it. We had to change ourselves and refine ourselves to become the kind of person that does do this full-time. You know what I mean?
Change, which I guess it's a good way to also kind of just get closer to closing, goes back to the very beginning of the podcast. It's that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to mess up, but you just keep going and figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and just to add on a little bit, like in terms of like my, like what I deal with in my life in terms of work, like, sure, I think from an outside perspective, I understand that some people could look at the work that I do. And I've gotten these kind of comments too, like, I wish I had your life, or that I'm jealous of the things you do. And so for me, it's difficult because I don't know how to respond to that. But also in my mind, I think, well, you can say that it's easier. The grass is always greener on the other side, right? So like, it's crazy. You work with Dan White on his magic show. That's insane. And yeah, that is pretty cool. But I'm the type of person that can do it. And the thing is, the reality of it is I come home at, and this is before quarantine, of course, because we don't do shows now, but I come home at 2:30 in the morning earliest. If I miss my train, I get home at 5 in the morning just because of how the train times work. I sprint a mile to Penn Station to catch my train, and I'm always within a range of 1 minute left until the train goes. I have to actually step out of the magic show like early one of the days. I still get there really early. I've gotten yelled at. I've made mistakes, and the mistakes have huge repercussions with such a production like that. I have a lot of stress working with a lot of these people that are revered. I have a lot of anxiety that I'm saying things that are of no value to them. I worked on Fallon with them. Sounds really cool, but it was my first thing, my first TV consultation, and I had no idea.
Yeah, because you did, it's a new ground for you.
It's uncharted territory. So there's extreme amounts of stress. And if you're able to handle that, then yes, you will be the type of person that continues to do those kinds of projects. But if you're not cut out for it, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And if you want to be cut out for it and you're just not, then you have to change and adapt. So for me, yeah, to be honest, I'm not the type of person that would have been cut out for it, but I had to make myself cut out for it because I want to continue doing great work like that. So it's tough. It's the grass is greener on the other side. Yeah. I'm not just waking up every day saying, look at the great work that I'm doing. No, it's complete opposite. I feel miserable. I feel imposter syndrome. Like I'm a phony, that it shouldn't be me that's taking the seat. So, you know, just some thoughts.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. I think people don't realize it took us a very long time to get to where we are.
And a lot of stress. Yeah.
Right? A lot of times of either being close to broke or you know, not. I think what's scary is compared to like a regular 9-to-5 job, you know what the end of the day is going to look like. You know, 2-3 months from now, oh yeah, I didn't know. I have this job. It's fine. But you don't really know when you're doing stuff like this. You just know that once this works, you still have to keep putting in more work because you need to make it keep going.
You're never just cruising where I could just stop working and it's going to keep coming to me. Absolutely not.
Especially now, what's going on, you need to adapt everything. Now there's the whole magic, which we won't even get into because we don't even know much about that either.
That's a whole nother thing. Exactly.
That's literally made up. We just made that up. That does not exist.
It's a novel thing that's going on. And exactly.
But yeah, no, cool, man. I think we'll end it there because I think we're more than an hour. It might be an hour and a half or something like that.
Sure, sure. If I could just have like one more remark for people, I guess I'm trying to, I guess I didn't summarize like kind of everything that I've been saying and like kind of giving like a take home point.
So if we were to summarize.
Right.
Even shorter.
Right. Because I think we're on like a question that you had about Instagram.
I think in general, just summarizing like, I guess the mindset, because I think we did touch upon like different interesting ideas, like the mindset and which it kind of goes into like, I guess, goals and stuff.
Right.
And social media,
I
guess, and just being you.
Yeah. I think if I were to make one point from listening to my story and my journey up till now, kind of like a bridge version, you know, my path is entirely different from yours and from everyone listening at home that wants to maybe pursue an unconventional career path, whether it's magic or it's music or some sort of arts and crafts or opening an online business store, whatever it is. We all have these different paths, and you know, it's about discovering what works for you and sticking with it and kind of having a vision of where, you know, self-correction of like, you know, that this is the path that you want to take and these are the approaches you're taking. And if it's not working out the way you want it to work out, you have to correct yourself, but there isn't this one right answer on how to do it. So all this nonsense when people say, oh, just follow this one simple hack to make a lot of money or be successful. Oh, yeah. It's a bunch of nonsense. Yeah. And the biggest thing I learned about being self-employed is self-improvement. You have to correct all aspects of your life to be able to do good work and have the proper mental space to continue growing in that endeavor that you have, creating better habits and better time management and, you know, just being productive. And what does that even mean? How to have work-life balance, which you don't in the beginning, by the way. It's heavily imbalanced. You put in like 100 hours a week and you make $0 for like a few months. You know what I mean? But it's really trying to figure out, it's discovering yourself and how your mind works. Because when it's a creative art, yeah, the mind is a chaotic space. And to try to synthesize ideas that are in your mind and make it happen in reality, the approach is different for everyone. And you're finally bringing out the individuality in you. And that's essentially a brand, right?
Yeah.
So it's really just trusting your gut. That's really what I'm trying to say.
Trusting the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because like you said, it's everyone has their own path. And
yep.
Coming from the acting world too, it's the same thing. Everyone has that syndrome of, oh my God, he's doing better than I am, or she's doing better than I am. Oh my God, how do you get this contract role? I want to be
the comparisons,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just have to remember that everyone has their own journey. Everyone has their own successes.
Mm-hmm.
So just focus on you.
Absolutely. Cool. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, man.
Plug in your, how do people contact you? Social security number, mail address.
Yeah. So again, guys, thanks for listening. My name's Dennis. You could follow me on Instagram or reach me there. It's going to be at the Close Up Artist. You could just spell that out. You'll find me. Same with, you know, email. It's just theCloseUpArtist@gmail.com. You can reach me there. If you have any questions regarding anything we're talking about, or if you're listening in, you want to hire me for a gig or something. Probably isn't the case, but you know, these are ways you can contact me and we could touch upon other.
And that's your website too, right?
Yeah, and that's my website as well, theCloseUpArtist.com.
Cool. Yep, and same with me, guys. You can find me at RichardTorresMagic.com, and that's Facebook and Instagram. I'm on Twitter. It's I'm Simply Rich, because the other one was too long. And that's pretty much it. Yeah, so thanks, guys. Thank you for listening in. And I think for our next podcast, who do you recommend?
Dude, just go down the line in our circle, man. Yeah, I think everyone has a different viewpoint and things that they could highlight.
I was thinking
Malachi, about Matt. And
I was thinking Matt, because he's doing the whole podcasting too. But
oh yeah,
so I guess we'll ask
totally.
Him. Yeah. Cool, yeah, man.
Bring in Watkins and, you know, everybody.
Watkins is definitely down. So we'll see what he said. It'd be cool. We should definitely have a conspiracy.
Yeah, sometime, man. I'd love that. Yeah, that'd be wild.
Later, man.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. How was that?
Oh, wait. Am I still recording? I'm still recording.
You're still recording, yeah.
How do you stop recording? Oh, here.
I don't know. You did it before.